And good morning, everybody. It's Artscape Weekend. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Maryland Morning, and it's time for our monthly Maryland Morning Movie Mayhem. So, Nathan, you're going to Artscape this weekend?
I might.
Good. Well, then I'm going to upgrade.
It's going to be hot.
It is going to be hot, but I'm going to upgrade my prediction for Artscape. And I was going to go with Artscape. I was certain it was going to be moderately festive. Now, knowing that you're going to go, I'm going to go with highly festive.
For some, perhaps.
Well, for you, indeed.
Right. For me, indeed, yes.
You know, the Baltimore Office of Promotion of the Arts says that Artscape is the largest free arts festival in the known universe. However, I bet
or in America, at least.
I bet they're shaking in their boots because Pluto, we haven't gotten all of the pictures back from Pluto. And they could find that there's a bigger arts festival on Pluto. You just never know.
It would be a very cold one, though.
It would be.
It wouldn't be nearly as warm.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty warm this weekend. All right, well, Jed Dietz from the Maryland Film Festival, not the Plutonian Film Festival, and Ann Hornaday from the Washington Post are here. Good morning to you both.
Good morning. Good morning.
You guys psyched about Artscape?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Of course.
You got to be psyched.
It's going to be a hot one.
It's going to be a hot one. So there's a bunch of movies in case, you know, you're not watching the Orioles tonight or going to Artscape to see George Clinton. I like George Clinton.
Who doesn't?
I know. So everything he wears, everything he plays, everything he sings.
He's the master.
He is the master. Just love him. But, you know, we have actually even more suggestions of how to get culturally enriched this weekend. And
there are ways.
You know, there are ways. One of them is to go see a movie called Tangerine, directed by Sean Baker. This is about a prostitute and her best friend, and they go out to L.A., and they're taking revenge on a previous boyfriend slash pimp, I guess. So what do you think, Ann?
Yeah, it's just for the family.
Yet another family rom-com.
You really teed it up, Tom. Thanks a lot. No, this is an absolutely charming little bagatelle. That was the kind of novelty of it. There's a couple of novelty items about it. One is that it was filmed entirely on iPhones, which is, you know, an arresting fact about it, but it looks fantastic. I mean, you think it's going to be that kind of garden hose, you know, restless camera, but it's actually visually very elegant. And Sean Baker follows these two characters who are both transgender, and through this kind of misbegotten neighborhood in West Hollywood that's known for its hustlers and its kind of, you know, lowlife, sleazy underbelly. And they have this kind of spontaneous, affectionate humor between them that just is, I found, very beguiling. They're both, you know, he found them in real life. They're both denizens of that neighborhood. They're not denizens of that life, but they know that life very well just from being around it so much. So they kind of lead us and the filmmaker through this kind of white underbelly of a world that is by turns appalling and funny and ultimately really touching.
Yeah, cool. And filmed on iPhones, Jen.
Yeah.
Is this, what's the motivation here? Is it just cheaper or is it a gimmick or how
yeah, work? I don't think it's a gimmick. He started because of budget, but he found that in this neighborhood, and this was really an organically evolved story. He had this sort of notion, he went into the neighborhood, he went to this shop, which is sort of the, as Anne called it, the 21 Club of this neighborhood, called Donut Time. And he started hanging around and getting to know transgender people from that neighborhood, and then went to a center there. And the one of the stars actually helped him evolve the story. So the iPhones he found with special lenses that had just been designed by this group called Moondog, and that they gave him, allowed him to really shoot with nobody thought a film was being made. So he thought it was much easier for the non-actors, although James Ransom from The Wire is in it. I mean, there are some actors in it, but the lead characters and most of the people you see are not professional actors.
And so maybe the sets didn't look like a set. Were there lights?
No. It was all shot on location. Yeah, uh-huh. it was
natural light.
Yeah, and he used a lot. It wasn't just iPhones. I mean, SoundCloud provided most of the soundtrack. He cast off of Vines. It is not being gimmicky at all. It's an expression of all this new filmmaking that we're all experiencing to some degree.
And it reminds me, I think last time we were here, we talked about a movie called Heaven Knows What, which is about a junkie in New York. And it has that same kind of energy and that closely observed energy of a subculture that's usually invisible or marginalized. And I think I like this one better just because I think it has a more expansive, optimistic exuberant view of just human friendship and possibility, and it's very winning.
Sounds like fun. Tangerine. All right. Mm-hmm. There's another one here that you, Jed, you had at the festival called Best of Enemies.
Yeah.
Directed by Morgan Neville and Robert Gordon. This is a documentary, and it's about these legendary debates on television between Gore Vidal and William F. Buckley back in the day, 1968, I guess.
Yeah, this is this another...
I heard a lot of great things about this movie. I wasn't able to see it at the festival.
Yeah, this is another subculture. And these two guys were sort of stunningly... I mean, looking back on it as you watch this film, you sort of can't believe what celebrities they were, because they're effete, intellectual, on opposite sides of the political spectrum. And there's a real personal tension all through this story, used very skillfully by Gore Vidal, I would say. As you see, I don't want to do too much spoiling, but as a little time capsule of media in 1968, and the fascination of where we were in political discourse in 1968, it's unbelievably entertaining, and made by one of the guys who did 20 Feet from Stardom, so very skilled filmmaking, really great.
And there was real animus between these two guys.
And it's just, you know, it kind of reminds me for people who saw Life Itself about Roger Ebert, it's similar to that animus between Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel, where you're kind of shocked that these two mature, grown-up men could be so kind of childish in terms of their emotional relationship with each other. But it's the stakes are such that it's ABC brought them on because they were last in the ratings. They were just in the dumper in terms of ratings for these political conventions, and they were looking for something. And like, who would think that a ratings bonanza would be to put these, as Jed said, these two effete, verbose intellectuals? It's like, oh, there's the ticket. You know, that'll bring in the viewers. But I don't want to spoil, but that's going on. So you're looking at that piece of media culture. And then you're also seeing this anticipation of where we are now with the food fight, 24/7 cable TV, you know, Yell Fest. I mean, this is where it began.
And in between, you had Saturday Night Live, you know, Jane, You Ignorant
True.
Slut.
That's exactly right. Yeah. But it just presages all of that. And then in the meantime, it just turns into this incredibly poignant portrait of both guys.
Yep.
And what this, you know, these debates did to them personally. And they left lasting scars on both gentlemen. And it's just a fascinating, deeply layered meditation on all of that.
All right. Best of Enemies, mm-hmm. about Gore Vidal and William F. Buckley. There's another documentary about Marlon Brando. It's called Listen to Me, Marlon. This sounds like an amazing piece as well.
I think any archival footage of Marlon Brando doing anything is going to be pretty fascinating. And I don't think this is a perfect film by any stretch, but literally watching him in every frame of this film is stunning, but some of it clips from his films.
And
which
this
are
is
all
a chronological
stunning.
Thing. We start, you know, with little Marlon and get to old
person. Yeah, pretty
Marlon.
Much. It's mostly career stuff. The most revelatory thing to me, just because I didn't know anything about it, is apparently he taped himself doing psychological sessions with himself. I mean, he became on tape, he became the shrink for himself.
He was self-shrinking himself.
Yes.
That's right.
And you see, I mean, there's quite a bit of that here, which is all sort of fascinating, because it's this great actor analyzing himself being a psychologist or a psychiatrist.
Literally the actor's studio.
And those tapes sort of are the spine of the film. So it's really an audio, it's a collage, you know, it's an audio collage. And for the most part, I think those tapes sort of form the major audio aural part. And then it's overlaid with images. So it's just a really interesting one. It played at AFI Docs this summer, and I think we are in, most people agree we're in a golden age of documentary film. I do think that formally I'm seeing a lot of reversion to certain structural tropes. You know, the talking heads and archival footage, the quirky central character and, you know, the handheld camera. And this is one of these rare films that does something formally that we don't often see.
Because there's no talking heads in this, right?
Exactly. It's archival footage kind of overlaid onto this verbal material that don't always aren't always literally lining up necessarily. So I just like it when filmmakers take a chance like that and try to sort of mix it up and do something a little bit different.
Cool. On 88.1, if you've just joined us, you're listening to the monthly Maryland Morning Movie Mayhem. Jed Dietz from the Maryland Film Festival is here, as well as Ann Hornaday, the film critic for The Washington Post. So, Jed, there's another one called... a movie called The End of the Tour, and you have a very personal relationship with one of the guys involved in this movie.
Yeah, just the writer is a Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright named Donald Margulies, and years ago I was placed in a public high school in New York City, John Dewey High School, to do a theatrical piece with a bunch of high school students, and Donald was one of those students.
So he's gone on to bigger and better things. Mm-hmm. Terrific.
Yep.
Starts with you.
Thanks to you.
Studied at the feet of the
You're
master.
You're welcome, Don Margulies.
There you go. This is a movie that stars Jason Segel and Jesse Eisenberg, and it's about a five-day interview between a reporter for Rolling Stone and David Foster Wallace right after the publication of his big epic novel, Infinite Jest, which everything about that novel was, you know, larger than life. Everything about him, in a way, you know, David Foster Wallace is larger than life. So the movie... lives up to the subject?
I think it really works. I think it's the most improbable premise for a movie. And I think actually the two actors who I like, both of them, but in these roles seem improbable. And the whole thing really works. I mean, it's a fascinating portrayal of a writer, but not a famous novelist, but who would aspire to be that, spending time with this very famous, big, as you said, bigger than life novelist. And the two of them... you know, very wary of each other, some out of jealousy, some out of just worrying about exposure and, you know, lack of privacy and that kind of stuff. And that's the film. I mean, so you get to see this, the sort of the world of celebrity writers viewed from a writer's viewpoint. And I think it's really compelling and a terrific film.
Yeah. Let's talk about another documentary, Ann, the one about Amy Winehouse, mm-hmm. Which has been, as a movie, as a film, it's been highly applauded and, you know, very well received. Miss Winehouse, of course, very tragic story, very gifted young woman who died of a heroin overdose, had a drug addiction. But this is all, again, this is a lot of archival footage and mm-hmm. sort of personal stuff from her, you know, family movies, that kind of thing.
Yeah, this was, this made its premiere at Cannes, and it was one of the big, in an otherwise kind of ho-hum Cannes this year, it was really a standout. And it's become a huge hit, especially in the UK, and it's doing very well here, too. I mean, it's really, I think it kind of qualifies as one of the summer, you know, summer's become a really good time to open a documentary just in terms of counter-programming to all the comic book movies, and so I think it's finding it's mm-hmm. really finding its perch within that. It's made by the same guy who did this wonderful documentary called Senna about a Formula One race car driver. Mm-hmm. And he's just... you know, I said before that I'm a little bored with these structural tropes, but this is an instance where that same kind of conventional structure really works in terms of using archival footage and talking heads to create a brand new vision of someone we thought we knew. I mean, he really, for one thing, he has access to her old home movies as a young girl. So it opens with you hearing her kind of just toss off little ditties with her friends. And you are stunned by
at the age of 14.
Exactly. Yeah. At this talent that's just bursting from this girl. And it's completely ungoverned and ungovernable. And then we trace the career, which, again, we think we know. But I think he really, one of the great values of this film is that he restores her and rescues her and puts her in her rightful place as a great jazz artist. Yeah. I mean, you really do see her as just a fabulous interpreter of jazz music.
The other thing I think that it does beautifully that I've never seen portrayed as well on film is this tsunami that celebrity can be and how overwhelming it can be for certain people. You see her fragility as a young person. And as this thing hits,
caught up with her quickly.
Oh, boy.
And clearly it was more than she could take.
And she was ambitious. I mean, she really, her art was very, very important to her. So you see her pursue it, but it outruns her. And you see what it does to her and the people around her. And it's horrifying to watch in that sense, but also fascinating. And I think it's something anybody who is thinking about a career in entertainment, film, music, whatever, should see this because it's something to learn from.
Well, and also I think it really indicts the audience in terms of our hunger for the train wreck narrative.
Yeah.
And it captures that moment.
Because it ain't the first train wreck in rock music. That's
exactly.
For sure.
Yeah. And it kind of, the glee with which, you know, talk show hosts, and she just became such a punchline. And it is just so queasy to look back on that and think, oh, did I laugh at that joke or did I buy that magazine? And,
it's not
done in any kind of polemical way. I mean, it's a very subtle, very elegant, nuanced film.
Really terrific.
Yeah, the film is called Amy, and I want to ask you about another Amy, Amy Schumer.
Oh, yes.
Who is really having...
In Trainwreck.
Yeah, she is in a train wreck.
That's right.
That's the name of her new movie. Which
and she's anything but.
Yeah, she's written this movie, and Judd Apatow, her good buddy from way back, is directing it. Mm-hmm. This is another hit out of the park here. I'm a huge fan of Amy Schumer. I think her show is hysterical.
It's
and
pretty
the social commentary that she has is just, you know, unlike stuff that anybody else is doing.
Yeah, I mean, she is somebody who has found her moment, and her moment has found her, and they're getting along famously together. And I really liked the movie. With Judd Apatow, he has a tendency to... He needs a strong editor, and that's true of this film, too. It kind of sags, it digresses, it's baggy, it's a little bit ungainly in its form. But... other than that, I mean, within it are countless delights.
Yeah.
Schumer's great. Bill Hader plays her love interest, who is an absolute wonder.
Wonderful.
I mean, he's really a revelation. Yeah. And who knew? LeBron James. I mean, he shows up in not even a cameo. I mean, he's like a bona fide supporting role as the best friend. And he's delightful. It doesn't necessarily have, I don't think, the social edge that her show does, just because her show can be more nimble. But it's good.
All right, Amy, and we will talk about Tig Notaro's movie the next time you're here, Jed.
Okay, starts on Netflix today.
Yeah, because another comic who's also having a moment. All right, great to see you both. Thank you so much.
Thank
enjoy
you.
Artscape. Artscape takes off in about an hour and 20 minutes on 88.1. You can come to our website, wipr.org/Marilyn Morning, for a complete schedule. We're coming up after the news and a little break. We're going to hear from a band that's appearing at Artscape. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great weekend.